Welcome, I'm Moshe Ferber.
And I am Ariel Munafon.
And this is the Silver Lining Podcast, a podcast about security architecture.
Good morning, everyone. Another podcast episode of Silver Lining. We are here also today with Moshe. Hi, Moshe.
Hi, good morning. How are you, Ariel?
Very good, very good. We have a very nice session before, and I hope that this will also be a great one.
Okay, so we have here today Eran from Oracle, which is a great to see you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm great to be seen.
So Eran, up until the last 5 minutes, he was the CISO for the Oracle Cloud, and now he has a new role. Tell us a little bit about yourself, about your new position in Oracle and your previous positions.
Yeah, so for the last year and a half, I was focused on ensuring that Oracle builds a secure cloud. Oracle actually has two clouds. We have the classic cloud, the Oracle Classic, and this new generation 2 cloud, which we'll talk about a lot from a security perspective in the next 30 minutes or so. But we built a great team, we built some great technologies, and now as part of releasing that, want to focus more on regulated markets as well as in Israel as well. So I moved to become the VP of development, focusing on those markets.
Have you started looking for an apartment in Tel Aviv?
Not yet, but it is very tempting seeing the summer. This is that you call this winter.
Well, when you see the rent.
It will be the winter.
Yeah. Well, about background a little bit. The first time I met you, I think you were CISO for Google Apps. Tell us a little bit about where you're coming from.
Yeah. So I've been in the security business or the security field my entire career, so almost 25 years. So started really from very much hands-on, started doing penetration testings in the mid-90s where there were very target-rich environments where you'd own customers literally within a couple minutes. You know, it used to be cute to have your pet's name as your password, right? And things that we just didn't think about back then, right? And you'd advertise that to your friends. Oh, look, my password is my boyfriend, you know? Then eventually worked up to managing large security deployments at lots of Fortune 500 customers. I spent a lot of that time at PricewaterhouseCoopers doing that for their customers in the entertainment and finance sector. And then I became the CISO of PricewaterhouseCoopers. So I was under 30 with a big responsibility. Learning a lot. It was a very, very different era than it is today, right? So this was the high day of the BlackBerry. It was all about the laptop, right? How do we ensure that we have 140,000 employees at that point with these devices all over the world that have financial data that can move markets? Mm-hmm. How do we ensure that they're secure? How do you ensure that people don't do silly things like print things off at a client and lose it or leave it at the printer? And then there was a small company that at that point had a funny name called Google. It turned out not to be a small company after a while, and wanted to get into the enterprise space, right? So it was only a consumer company at that point, and thought it had some great technologies, specifically Gmail, and said, hey, Google uses this to run their email internally. How do we get other enterprises to use it? And the number one concern enterprises had with using Google, this is before we even started calling it cloud, there was no cloud yet, there was no AWS yet, was security. And how do we solve that? Mm-hmm. So I went to Google, built out the team, built out all the technologies, all the orgs, all the processes that needed to produce that, right? Very proud with some of the things we accomplished. And then from there, went and did a small startup in the e-commerce space that basically competed with Amazon in e-commerce, but looked at e-commerce from an engineering problem. So we all know there's no such thing as free shipping. Somebody has to pay for the shipping. So the question is how? How do you pay for that shipping? And one way to pay for that shipping is to encourage customers to build a bigger cart, to build a bigger box, right? So you get to amortize that cost of shipping over more items. And one way to get customers to build a bigger box is to start discounting things dynamically the more that they put in the box. So for example, if I was buying a glass and I have to put that into a certain box, a certain size, I know that in that box, I can also fit a microphone. Mm-hmm. And I know from your past history that you are very much into podcasts or audio, and you're a male of a certain age. So I know which items to show you and start reducing the prices mm-hmm. the more you build the box. So it was a very different way to look at e-commerce at the time. And the company did very well. We sold it to Walmart for $3.3 billion. In a very fast time, and I thought I was done. I thought I was at least going to take some time off, but then Oracle came knocking. So my 3 to 5 years off that I was planning on taking became about 3 months. And Oracle did something very exciting that I think is very hard to do and obviously very expensive. It looked around and saw we have all these Generation 1 clouds, let's call them Google, AWS, Azure. And even Oracle as well. Mm-hmm. These were clouds that were built for a very different type of workload, right? They were built for the Netflixes, the Twitters. And if we wanted to build a cloud for where Oracle is strong, which is some of the world's most security-sensitive data, so governments run on Oracle, borders run on Oracle, intelligence agencies run on Oracle.
Mm-hmm. How do we where that counts?
Yes,
Oracle.
Yeah. Is but we didn't feel that Generation 1 clouds had the security that we would feel comfortable to put those type of data in there. So with a very big investment, Oracle designed a cloud from the ground up with security in mind, hired a lot of people mm-hmm. that built it the first time, right, including myself, and said, hey, if you could do it all over again, what would you do different? Mm-hmm. And security is a big area that we do different, right? And if I dive into that just for a little bit, there's a couple problems with the Generation 1 clouds when you're looking at super sensitive workloads. First is that you're sharing the processor. You're sharing the network. You're sharing everything on that machine, maybe with other customers, or at the very least with the cloud provider, right? Because that processor, not only are you using as a customer, but that cloud provider is using that to manage that machine, mm-hmm. Right? They're using that for billing. They're using that to understand how that machine is doing. They're using that for performance. So even if you are quote unquote dedicated in the traditional Gen 1 clouds, it's not really dedicated. So that was one problem that we had to solve, and we solved it very well by taking that processor and building another processor and putting it outside of the machine. So now we don't actually use that same processor for what we call the control plane. The control network that manages the cloud is very different than the network that customers are on. So now concerns about noisy neighbors are much less concerning.
Okay, so just to emphasize, we're starting this process from the hardware itself. So you're designing the hardware itself on a different way by separating the managerial aspect of the cloud and the customer data.
That's okay. Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the unique things about Oracle also is one of the few cloud providers that owns the entire stack from the mm-hmm. hardware to the software to all the infrastructure to obviously the database. Speaking about database, one of the things that we saw, and this is a great leadway into the topics we want to talk about, is customers have a hard time managing security for different cloud aspects, right? And let's pick on database for a second. So how can we take all of those things away from customers and have that happen magically? Can we build a database that secures itself by itself, that patches itself, that heals itself, that tunes itself? And make customers actually focus on the things that are unique to them, but not these infrastructure aspects that you need to get right and that are very time consuming. And we did that with a couple products called Autonomous Database. So it's a database that configures itself, it secures itself, it tunes itself, it optimizes itself. So if I need more power, because now it's busy season, it can increase the performance. If I want to optimize on cost, because I don't mind it being slower and I want to spend less, you can also do that for different types of workloads. So I think we have some really cool revolutionary stuff, both from a performance, a usability, and of course, a security perspective.
I think that is interesting to see how, Oracle start late going to the cloud, and they try to find something that
they try to find the right way to attack it.
So I had a few talks with Ran and also Asaf. So I think that it's interesting, and I don't really think that everybody knows about that. So I think that is a good point to mention.
Yeah, no, we definitely got late to the game, and when you get late to the game, you have to have something different, right? For people to be compelled to move to your product. This is true in any, right? And we also saw that if we just look at current technologies, right? The big players, let's move out of enterprise for a second. You know, even Google or Facebook weren't the first ones in their respective games, right? There were 10, 15 search engines before Google, right? AltaVista, InfoSeek, Ask Jeeves, etc. And those obviously are, we don't even think about them.
Well, you came to this point where the traditional cloud provider have their infrastructure a bit old and beaten already. Now they are new coming with a new refreshed look.
Yeah. And it's very hard when you have an existing infrastructure, right? So like the other providers have, right? It's going to be very time consuming and costly to upgrade and move to this, mm-hmm. as well as there's the period that they have to go through that we have the benefit of not, of having to manage both, right? If I'm running a generation one and a generation two, that makes it very tough on me as a provider or as a customer. And so when you start from a zero.
Okay.
So basically you have a new infrastructure, and you mentioned already that one of those goals of this infrastructure is to focus on the problems that traditional clouds has. One of the biggest problems that we see is misconfiguration. And you mentioned that with the databases that only we are standing in the beginning of this week. Last week, one of Israel's biggest payment application had a database exposed on the some kind of a cloud infrastructure. Again, we don't know the details because they didn't publish, but judging from the background of the researcher who found it, I'm guessing it was either a MongoDB or some kind of Elasticsearch database open somewhere on a cloud infrastructure. At least this is the other findings from this researcher. So, and of course, we are 2 weeks after Microsoft had a problem of, their entire database of customer support was exposed on somewhere on Azure server. So we constantly see misconfiguration, and everybody likes to quote Gartner that are saying 95 of cloud incidents will be customer self-configuration. And this was our goal in this conversation today. Talk a little bit about misconfiguration, why they happened, and how do you see in your own eyes, how do you think that you can change this current state?
Yeah, I think that's an exciting topic, right? I think we are going to see, and just to echo what you said, you know, I think 2019 was the year of the cloud misconfiguration. As we see more and more customers moving to the cloud, we're going to see more and more misconfigurations. The clouds were not built for the type of workloads that are running in them. And with having very complex policies in the cloud providers, with having multiple ways to change those policies, whether it's through the UI or the API or command line, and I have policies overwriting other policies, I think we're going to see more of these things that get open to the internet that were never intended to it.
And how do you see, really the vendors, the cloud providers can help it make better?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that cloud providers can do and need to do. We've operated until now in the cloud space with the shared responsibility model. With this model that the cloud provider produces an infrastructure, that infrastructure is secure, but everything that you put on that infrastructure is the customer's responsibility, right? So when we talk and when you hear some of those cloud providers refute some of these misconfiguration issues that you quoted, right? They say, hey, it's not my fault, right? That's a very logical approach. They said, we gave you the tools, you didn't use the tools, whether you didn't understand them or you misconfigured them, but that's not on us. I think that's a fundamentally flawed model and a model that needs to change. I think there's a couple ways to change that. First is offering better tools. And I'll give an example, for example, for one that we're coming out with that's called Maximum Security Zones. And what Maximum Security Zones does is it basically allows customers to define a compartment. And everything that you put in that compartment will always have the highest level of security. And that security cannot be turned off, right? So it can never be exposed to the internet. Can never be publicly facing. So I don't have to worry about these misconfigurations that, hey, by accident something got opened that shouldn't. It will only have encrypted data. It will only accept encrypted data. It will require two-factor authentication, right? So if you start looking just even those three things that I mentioned, open to the internet, encryption, and user authentication, I don't want to badmouth anybody, but you can see how many of the 2019 issues would have gone away. Mm-hmm. With just those
three common mistakes. Open the service to the internet, use unencrypted data, and use basic authentication. So basically you're saying your servers are coming from the deep inside, are coming with those controls.
So you can put something in there, right? So you want to put things like your user database, your customer lists, right? Things that are sensitive, you're going to want to put in a secure compartment and not have those security controls being able to turn off.
Okay. So this is one.
That's one. Another one is, so that's very proactive, right? How do we prevent it? There's other ones where cloud providers have unique knowledge. They see things that are going on throughout the entire cloud. They see things that are going on to your environment from a customer perspective, and allow you to react or at least know about those things proactively. So for example, we have another product called CloudGuard. And what CloudGuard is, it looks for different types of settings that should not happen, different types of user behavior that we believe is anomalous. Right? So for example, if you were logging in from here and Russia at the same time, right? That's probably a very suspicious behavior. But for customers to achieve that in the cloud today on other cloud providers, that's actually not an easy thing to do. We all accept that as users, right? When we go to a website, when we go to our Hotmail, Gmail, etc. account, it flags us. But for our enterprise space, that's actually very tough, right? Because there's different ways we all log into to our enterprise, different UIs, different applications. But cloud providers can see that. So with CloudGuard, you can either pre-configure what should happen when I see those type of activities. So, hey, let me force and require two-factor authentication. Let me block that user and send an alert. So it's kind of got that two steps. One step is I can notify, but second step is take action. I see a connection from a suspicious IP address, something that's coming from Tor, a Tor network, right? There's probably not a reason to access this server ever from a Tor network, a legitimate user. So what should I do at that point?
And if we are talking more about changing that shared responsibility model, that it was something that we took as a that is what it is.
It's like the basic thing. This is where you this is how you do it. So basically we're saying let's change this paradigm and put more responsibility on the cloud provider, because they have better visibility to this than the customer. They can firstly detect if you're if somebody's connecting through Tor. They can detect if you have a public IP address open to the world. I mean, they can detect it faster than you. So what you're saying is shift more responsibility to them. Anyway, you're paying them a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, it's even beyond. I mean, when we see these security issues, they're beyond them. They end up costing the companies a lot more than the money than they're usually paying the cloud provider, right? I mean, you're losing the direct cost of dealing with the breach, the brand responsibility, the PR nightmare that you deal with. Now with a lot of the privacy laws, there's actual real dollar amounts of what you have to pay to the users that were impacted. So we should be demanding more from our cloud provider. I think we've, as customers, have accepted the previous shared responsibility model, and it got us to where we are today, but I don't think it's going to get us to the future.
Okay. Two famous misconfigurations. One of them is basically forgetting your API keys or different configuration files, and second one is leaving your buckets open. How would Oracle Cloud handle those stuff?
Yes, no. I mean, so we see those, the API keys, putting API keys into public GitHubs and places that they shouldn't be. I think there's a couple ways Oracle Cloud would handle that. First, if I am putting something and designing it in the beginning from maximum security zones and defining where can it get access to. So even if that API key, for example, is found, it won't let access, right? If I'm trying to access it in certain ways, right? Because I'm always going to require a two-factor or second factor, so the API key won't suffice. What was the other one that you mentioned?
Buckets.
The buckets. Yeah. Buckets. So I think the same way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also notifying on big changes, right? So all of a sudden I see a user that is exfiltrating. That's a big word on a Sunday. Removing a lot of data in a rapid manner, right? They're behaving abnormally than they typically used to, which is what we often see in these type of security incidents, right? When I did find an API key or when something got open, right? Now I'm starting to dump it. And if user Alice always was doing, several hundred megabytes a day, and now all of a sudden she's trying to download terabytes a day, guess what? Something looks weird. We should let our customer know.
Bitcoin mining is something else.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
you can take that exact same approach, right? So you've seen CPUs that, usually had, 20, 30% utilization. All of a sudden now the utilization is going high. And all of a sudden, I'm requesting GPUs on my cloud account. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that thinking about the approach than giving more tools. You talk about tools, but I don't see now, so many tools that you can handle the developers.
That's the idea. I mean, this is generation two of cloud providers. We learn a lot from the mistakes of generation one. So in generation one, now you have to run external tools in order to detect a bucket. Now in generation two, let's do it from the application code itself, from the infrastructure code itself. Let's not have the possibility of having an open bucket unless you specifically want so. I mean, let's think about it the other way around. Traditional cloud provider had all the securities open by default. I mean, you open an account in Azure today, all your ports are open. You have to start closing it. Because why? But the pitch is saying, go into a cloud provider, in 5 minutes, you have an application up and running. They don't want to tell you, open the firewall port, put your key in the right position, right? And generation two seems to be a different mindset, right? We're going to have you secured. Now, if you want to open things, we let you do that. But that's an opt-in approach.
Yeah I think very similar to exactly what you're saying, right? So Gen 1 opted a lot more on ease of use, right? That it was over-indexed on ease of use and got us the workloads and the security issues that we've seen. Now, as we want to move some of these more security-sensitive workloads, we should be indexing more on security, right? That you intentionally have to open things, that things are encrypted by default, that traffic is encrypted by default, things are encrypted at rest by default, things aren't available to the internet by default, etc. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly where we're going. I mean, as security professionals, right, this is basically going back to the basics, right? In Security 101, we all learned that turn everything off, and only turn on the things that you need. And as you said, cloud providers, because of they were moving against what was the current trend at the time, right? There was a very different trend if we go back when these cloud providers all built their infrastructure 10, 12 years ago. It was, hey, what is better, on-premise or in the cloud? We obviously don't have that conversation as much as we used to, but now it's how do we secure the cloud?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So summarizing all of this, you have a new job in Oracle and you take care of new regulated industries, and also you're going to promote this in Israel, and you have a region coming up, which is very exciting. Yeah, and part of your the things that you did in Oracle is building the next generation of cloud, second generation of cloud, which is basically, first of all, you build it from the hardware up. So this is very exciting. I mean, starting planning everything from scratch, and that's bring the good news. And basically, the idea is to have a self-healing cloud. Might be a big word, but this is where you're going, right? So something that can correct itself. Correct security mistakes.
Absolutely. I mean, even if we look at the next thing after misconfigurations that we saw is not patching
servers,
known vulnerabilities, right? I mean, it's you don't know that server exists, or you don't know that patch exists. So building a cloud that is self-healing, patches itself, corrects itself,
I was in the last, not in the open world, and Larry talked about the robots that and the old AI that was built really on the hardware, the face, the step.
Yes, we are all security robots.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically you are building the next generation of cloud, which is a self-healing. It will defend you more in misconfiguration because it will have more security embedded into it. Things that we've seen before, like you need to close firewall ports, you need to embed your identity in access management, you need to start encryption. It will be enabled by default and you have to turn it off if you want. I mean, it comes with pretty heavy security in mind. And this is part of basically what you're saying, a change of minds. So cloud providers should do more. They should give you better tools. They should be more responsible over the security and not say, okay, this was customer responsibility, not our problem.
It shouldn't just be better tools, right? We want to move to this autonomous self-healing cloud, mm-hmm. right? So just as cars have evolved, right? My girlfriend has a Tesla and it drives itself and it doesn't require humans to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And it's more safe than a human driver. That's where we need to move with clouds, right? That mm-hmm. are using advances in machine learning and artificial intelligence to self-secure themselves rather than depending on a user behind the wheel. Even though users, you know, now we have all these tools that tell you, hey, there's somebody on the blind spot. But if the car is driving by itself, it already knows that and it's going to react accordingly.
Okay, very interesting. You have a big challenges ahead, so good luck with those.
Yeah. So thank you, Aran, for being with us. I hope that we will see you more in Israel and maybe to come again to our podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you very much.